This is Lynn Benton Tractors Newsmakers, Wednesdays with Denise Quinn and Dave Bourne. Presented by Les Schwab Tires and sponsored in part by Furbish, a salvage place, and Kennedy Tax Solutions. Live, local talk that matters to you. Now, here's Denise and Dave from the Capital Auto Group Studios, exclusively on 1430 KYKN. Salem is listening.
And welcome, everybody, to Newsmakers. I'm Denise Quinn. Wait.
And I'm Dave Bourne.
Clearly, I'm not Denise Quinn. Denise has the day off. We wish her well. This is Brent DeHart, been called in to fill in for Wednesdays with Denise. And Dave Bourne, of course, is on his way back from being on location. So welcome to Newsmakers. And this is the hour every single Monday through Friday where we talk local issues, ideas, institutions, and initiatives, things that affect your quality of life, things that affect your governance, and things that affect our pocketbooks here in the Mid-Valley. Today, you know, I was looking forward to having Denise be able to speak to the mayor all day. The mayor's here with us today, often joining us on Newsmakers on Tuesday. And then, of course, we talked about him yesterday, trying to get away with that and give him a whole week to forget what we said about him. But here he is right in front of us. Welcome, Mayor Chuck Bennett of the City of Salem.
Thank you, Brent.
Nice to see you.
It's nice to see you.
Sorry.
You were a pleasant surprise. I thought I was going to see Denise. I haven't seen her in quite a while.
So. Now, you know Mayor Bennett is a politician because he came in and he was severely disappointed to not have Denise here. So he tells me it's a pleasant surprise, and that's not true at all. He's going to have to get a red tie and have a press briefing, be accused of all of this, making it up. Anyway, welcome to have you.
Thank you.
Welcome. It's nice to have you. You had a meeting this week. There's a lot going on with the City of Salem. A couple of topics.
Yeah.
The top one, of course, is did we or did we not appoint a new council to represent Ward 7? And just before the show, the mayor dropped a bombshell. So appointed to fill the vacancy was Vanessa Nordyke on Wednesday, seemingly.
Yeah. Yeah. There was a, I think, a mistake made by the city attorney when we hit a point where we were voting on this office. It requires a majority of those voting to pass to approve the new councilor. We had eight councilors there. All the council was there. It ended up being four for Ms. Nordyke, three for
Reed Sund,
and one for Bonnie Heitch, which when you add it up, it's one person has four, one person has three, one person has one. And the city attorney, as our parliamentarian, said that the four was a majority. And turns out four is not a majority of eight. It's half of eight. And
well, he did
there
go
was
to law
some,
school. No.
There actually were some real objections or concern. Several counselors commented. I asked the attorney about it a couple times just to make sure I understood, and he was quite emphatic that we had hit the proper number. And then looking at it again, I think he's come away saying, boy, did I goof. And so we're going to, I think, at this point, take it up on Monday and have another vote on this. And I'm not convinced it will change the outcome of the choice Ms. Nordyke is very likely to remain on the council, but we'll see. We'll see how it ends up. But we have to get to a 5-3 vote.
So the most likely scenario is the councilor who voted for the person who had dropped out would have to switch their votes so that Vanessa could get 4-5 votes.
That's right.
Okay. And we obviously, since there are 8 votes cast, you have one vacancy in Ward 7, so the possibility of a tie always exists.
It doesn't actually. What you do is continue, and that's where the mistake was made. It should have been voted on again immediately and voted on until somebody ends up with 5 votes.
Oh.
You just sit there and vote and vote and vote and vote if you have to.
Until somebody changes, and let's get this over with.
So we'll see how this turns out. At this point, though, the advice I've received is that we will be taking this up on Monday.
I didn't watch or attend the meeting. Did the person that voted for Bonnie Heisch, did they make any commentary about, hey, I really feel that this is the best person, or did that even come out, or is it just part of the private vote?
It was a private vote. Okay. Well, private. I mean, it's a public record.
Right, but I mean, they don't. So is identified who was voting for whom?
It wasn't identified during, it hasn't been identified yet. Okay. If someone wanted to go in and request the voting, the ballots, we sign each ballot, and you can see how people voted.
This is one of those things that, hey, you know, mistakes happen.
That's
you know
how,
what I mean?
Yeah.
There are
and
bigger things to worry about.
I know the city attorney is embarrassed by it, understandably so, but it ain't the end of the world. It's very understandable how you can sort of look at it a couple of different ways, but I think if you look at it according to our rules, it's a majority, which would be five of eight.
And majority, plurality, there's,
I know, I know. Boy, welcome to government, huh?
All right, but we should anticipate another
vote.
Now
you begin to understand, or I do begin to understand, this billions and trillions problem at the federal level, huh?
So we would anticipate, is there going to be a special meeting, or are you going to wait until the next council meeting?
It is the next regular council meeting is Monday.
Okay. All righty then. So speaking of council meetings, interesting thing in the agenda, and you guys have you just had a work session.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
And the work session had a lot to do with urban renewal, which, of course, on this program, we're big proponents of this tool, and other opportunities for incentivizing with financial incentives to help better
that's
the city.
That's really good. Good. No, that is. I mean, they are a major tool for the city of Salem in terms of economic development. We're also now looking at it, at using it to extend into some housing as well.
So, you know, and sometimes it can get complicated for the public because there's an urban renewal area, and we talk about that a fair bit, but there are also enterprise zones, there's opportunity zones, there's tax abatements, there's grant programs,
yeah.
You went over it in some of your, some of the staff reports having to do with the affordable housing.
Yeah, yeah, that was actually part of this discussion on Monday. At the work session was on affordable housing.
I don't think most of the public is aware of this, and can you give us some sort of idea of, you know, how the city can incentivize affordable housing?
Well, the proposal, I'm sure a variety of ways we could do it, but in this case, the one that we discussed on Monday, it's being proposed by staff, and I want to make very clear, none of this has been approved yet by the agency or the council. So right now, we're just going over ideas. This one is being used. It creates a small urban renewal area. In this case, it's just a few acres, and it's the old north campus of the state hospital. And what it would do is, working with a developer who agrees to this, they would get, I think it was 10, but if it was 30, I stand corrected. Year tax abatement on a major project, housing project of apartments there being proposed, if 20% of them are affordable housing, which is low-income housing, mm-hmm. essentially. And this is a new idea to try to get more of this lower income housing built into neighborhoods, not just in single building chunks. And in fact, and I think you know this, this is a very difficult area to get people to build in, this affordable housing area. Mm. In fact, we really only have one builder right now in town who's even approaching this kind of housing. There have been others who have left the business because you just can't make any profit on affordable housing.
And there's a lot of red tape, honestly.
As Dave Bourne would say,
there's a lot of red tape
no, and Dave's
to qualify
right.
for all of these things. At a certain point, it's like, I want to do this. And I can think of a developer that's developed a few in town. And
but he's
just
quit.
Get harder and harder and harder.
Yeah.
They got federal restrictions, and then you've got the whole court of public opinion, and then we've got NIMBYism, and they have to, you know, the state and the federal bureaucracies to get through. And it just, and for a much smaller profit level than you would if you just built market rate apartments, right?
That's probably the biggest problem. I think generally developers have been able to figure out how to work with the red tape. They understand the lead time it takes to come in and work on government programs. What I think is difficult for developers to understand is, why am I doing all this work and I'm losing money in the process, or I'm barely breaking even? And what is then ultimately the benefit? And the city is not structured to be that developer. That is not what we do. We are not developers. Mm-hmm. So you tend to rely on the private sector, and we really have had there's never been a lot of folks in this part side of the housing construction business, but those that were have really thinned out quite a bit over time.
We're talking to Mayor Chuck Bennett of the city of Salem. I think he pretty much said, let the government do what they're good at, but the private sector, let them do what they're good at. Fair
to
say?
That'd be a good way to
describe. All right, we're going to take a break. We're going to come back, and I'm going to plead with the mayor to make sure we don't do the same mistake that Portland has done. This is Brent DeHart for Dave Bourne on 1430 KYKN. Salem's listening.
This is Lindman & Tractor's Newsmakers, Wednesdays with Denise and Dave, presented by Les Schwab Tires and sponsored in part by Furbish, a salvage place, and Kennedy Tax Solutions. Now let's go back to the Capital Auto Group studios on 1430 KYKN. Salem is listening.
This segment of Newsmakers is proudly brought to you by Sylvan Learning Center.
Thank you, Hunter, and thank you, Sylvan Learning Center, for sponsoring this segment. This is Brent DeHart filling in for Denise Quinn, and with us here in the studio is Mayor Chuck Bennett, here to argue with me on all sorts of things, actually. We get along most of the time, except when he's not listening, which... Then we get to banter a little bit.
Well, I was supposed to be here with Denise. That's what I was told. I'm sorry, it's such a severe disappointment.
Okay. We're talking about some of the financial incentives that the city of Salem can utilize to help spur development, redevelopment, and actually housing options and all sorts of things. We've talked about it in the past, and some people are fans of the tools and some people are not. I tend to be a fan of programs that incentivize where the city becomes a catalyst. City or county or state, they become a catalyst rather than the developer, as the mayor was saying in the last segment. Now, opportunity zones are fairly new with the Trump tax bill a couple of years ago. Enterprise zones are old, and we utilize those as well. Enterprise zone typically has a 3 to 5 year tax abatement. This, I don't get people that don't like enterprise zones, because 5 years are up, and suddenly let's use the Home Depot improvement. I don't know if it was an enterprise zone, so don't write your cards and letters. But they build this huge facility, and if they get, I mean, that 3 to 5 years vanished in a hurry, and suddenly they're paying huge amounts of property tax.
Yeah.
And if we can get them and do away, they call it a corporate welfare, but if we can get them to invest here, employ our citizens, and pretty soon they're going to be paying huge tickets in property tax, I think it's a win.
Yeah, you and I agree on this. I think it's very important that the city of Salem have available the broadest possible range of tools to attract housing, business improvement, business construction, industrial development, and ultimately job creation. And if you're not taking it very, very seriously, you and I both know, and I just ask folks listening, trust me, other cities do, and they will go to other cities. And it's not that we're trying to outbid each other. We've got a lot to offer here. And one of them is we do an outstanding job of permitting. We actually move people through a process to where they're not losing money waiting for us to get them on the ground and moving dirt. But that's only part of the problem. And in housing especially, we get, and I think if you listen to folks talk about it, There is a lot of interest in housing, whether it's affordable housing or just enough housing, whether it's apartments or houses. The expectation is, at least as it comes at me, is that somehow government has a role. And what we're doing right now are exploring the various possibilities. Mm-hmm. What are the many ways that both through state, federal, state, and then some local actions we can take that we can help spur housing construction, because people are coming here. And if you want to have that kind of housing mix that lets people who live here, people who are coming here, trying to have the correct housing mix that meets the needs of that various those various groups, we have to have some involvement at some level, and usually it's at the lower end, the lower income portion of it. That it's just hard to get development in that area.
So my reference from the last segment about Portland, Portland did put in, they wanted to encourage lower income or lower rent apartments by legislation, not regulation, where it said if you're going to build it, you must also include. Unfortunately, Portland did that without regard to the actual numbers.
Yeah.
And they ended up with a catastrophe of a public policy catastrophe where the number of permits taken out, the developers to build multifamily housing, the permits went down by 90%.
Yeah.
And suddenly there's a huge housing shortage in Portland. And then there's a huge rent increase throughout the whole region because the rents are sky high, because there's not enough supply, because you tried to regulate it into existence instead of allowing the market at least to make some money to build them, or no one's going to build. So we were talking during the break. There's a couple other programs that may or may not intersect with the property you're talking about along Center Street, right? The old hospital area. There's a multi-unit housing tax incentive program. Folks, there are acronyms all over the place. The MUTIP, MUTIP, right? And there's also another one called a low-income rental housing property tax exemption program. And that acronym has actually no pronunciation. That would be a different language I'm not familiar with. Low-income. Anyway, the programs, they exist. So if someone's looking to build them and they want to or feel like they need to or they're looking for incentives, they should come talk to staff, right?
Yeah, our urban development staff is conversant. They can speak that language.
They can pronounce that acronym.
They can pronounce that acronym, and you'll be surprised at what great sense it makes. But actually, there are a whole range of federal, state, and local programs. And if people are interested in doing this kind of development or are looking to do even smaller, I mean, we're not talking hundreds of unit developments. They can be much smaller numbers. And depending on what exactly you have in mind, there are programs probably available to assist you. Now, it doesn't pay for the whole thing. This is not like you get to build for free. But you do get some assistance in terms of making it possible or incentivizing you to move ahead on various types of housing. We have the need in this community for a broad spectrum of housing types and costs. And we, as a city, our policy is to do everything we can to assist and encourage meeting each of those groups' needs in the community because they're all here.
You're right, Mayor. We're talking to Mayor Chuck Bennett of the City of Salem, and the need is there. So in the staff report, the Salem Housing Authority has a waiting list for affordable housing of 6,000 individuals and families. I think that would surprise a lot of people, lower-income people trying to get housing assistance, and there's 6,000 on the waiting list.
Remember, and we heard this, I was at an event with the school superintendent, Christy Perry, yesterday, and she brought up a number that you just got to kind of stop and go, wow. 71% of the children in Salem Public Schools are below the poverty level. They're in poverty. 71% of the children in this school district. That should give you a sense of really how large the issues are here in terms of dealing particularly with low-income low-income families and individuals, and certainly that's not every family, but that is the school-age population. That's younger families, and they need housing, and providing that housing is part of the challenge for any community. And you've done, I think, a really good job of describing how to do it wrong, which is the way Portland did it, which is just say, no, if you're going to build anything, you're going to create this many low-income houses without any understanding of the economics of housing building construction and all the rest of it, and the kind of return you need to get to pay off the costs associated with it.
Mayor, do you think
we just can't afford to have housing stop here? Portland, yeah. Maybe they can. We can't.
Do you think that you're going to get neighborhood pushback, some NIMBYism, some this is not the right place for affordable housing in the area off of Center Street there, which is, you know, kind of in the core of town and it's near I-5 and so forth? Are we going to have, are you going to face, or is the council going to face a lot of public backlash about, hey, this is not the right place for affordable housing, you know, projects?
You know, I don't think so. I'll be honest with you. The developer who's been working on that project, Mountain West, has done an absolutely superb job working with that surrounding neighborhood to the point that the neighborhood supports it. Now, there are individuals who apparently didn't get the memo, and as usual, they come out of the woodwork at the very last minute saying, what are you doing here? Why didn't I know about it? Well, part of it is you got to pay attention to your mail because you're being notified of what's going on. Be involved with your neighborhood group. Pay attention so that you can become part. We really expect in Salem that developers will work with their neighborhoods. Now, that doesn't occur with everybody, but this one will not have any problems because of a low-income component. If anything, I think it's being really widely accepted in that neighborhood. But they have spent years working with NESCA, the Northeast Salem Community Association, the neighborhood group in that area, and Northeast Neighbors, NIN, the other neighborhood group, regularly meeting with them. And I got to give kind of a shout out to Richard Berger, who has represented Mountain West and Larry and Jason Tokarski in this arena. The community outreach is it's a real model of how this should be done and was responsive. This isn't a re-roll over them. This was let's all work together. It's very well done. Very well done.
Well, that's good to know. And it'll be a mix of housing types, presumably.
Yes.
And is this the site that you think they will utilize kind of the micro urban renewal area type of concept?
That's what I think will happen there, but it's going to include single family on the outside, on Park and D Street sides of the property. Then the interior will include market rate and affordable housing in a mix. I mean, this isn't like, you know, the poor people are over here, the medium income people are here, and the rich people are here. It's a really well-mixed community. It's going to be a real full-service development pool and community space, all that kind of stuff. And then a chunk of that property is being retained by the state along Center Street, essentially 25th to Park on Center Street for some commercial development. And we'll see how that progresses. There's still work going on. You know, you're working with the state of Oregon. It takes a while to work through some of the issues. We're also getting out of it in terms of the work. We're also doing a low-income, very low-income, almost targeting onto homeless individuals at the old Yaquina Hall, which was the nurse's dorm at the state hospital. The city is redeveloping that into in excess, I think, of 50 units. And we also are getting about a six-acre park up in the northwest corner. It's currently looks like a park. It's kind of a rugby, you know, pickup field, and that'll become a city park.
Very interesting development in a very critical part of town. We're going to shift parts of town we're talking about and incentive programs, and we're going to talk about how Fairview Industrial intersects with the Salem Airport. If you'll stick with us, we're talking to Mayor Chuck Bennett. We welcome back to the studio Dave Morin. Woo-hoo! Stick with us. We'll be right back on 1430 KYKN.
Now, back to Len Benton Tractor's Newsmakers, Wednesdays with Denise Quinn and Dave Bourne, presented by Les Schwab Tires, and sponsored in part by Furbish, a salvage place, and Kennedy Tax Solutions, in the Capital Auto Group studios on 1430 KYKN. Salem is listening.
This segment of Newsmakers is proudly brought to you by Sylvan Learning Center. And Denise is out sick today, so Brent has graciously stepped in today and surprised the mayor. And
thanks thank for you. Having me in. Hope you're all not too disappointed.
Not at all. I'm actually very happy to see you. I miss you on Wednesdays, even though, you know, Denise is fun and everything, but I miss seeing
it
you.
Just isn't Brent, is it?
No.
Yeah, you can't miss me if I don't go away.
True.
All right. So if you weren't with us at the top of the hour, Vanessa Nordyke appointed to the city council apparently on Monday. Apparently not so, due to a miscount of sorts. She needed a majority of votes, and she got 4 out of 8. So the mayor's reporting to us.
As the mayor pointed out, that's only half.
Yeah, a real mathematician over here.
It's breaking news. Breaking news here on KYKN. Yes. She's not actually a counselor yet. So we'll have to see about a recount and a revote until
somebody
gets. And
when is that happening?
Well, it'll be Monday, unless there is some reason not to proceed that direction. But I think from what I've picked up in conversations with, particularly with the city attorney, that appears to be the direction we'll be going.
So, Mayor, I don't know if you want to wade into this, and you can wave me off. And Vanessa Nordyke, we were talking about this on Monday or Tuesday. That her comments in response to a question in the interview on the third bridge was that the cost shouldn't fall only on Salem residents, as this is as reported by the Salem Reporter, and that the quote was, "I absolutely think we should look at additional river crossing capacity in the years to come, but I think we can do a better job moving forward in determining where and how and when and how much." So I was complaining that quote really showed that she's completely ignorant of the issues that surrounded
this. And my brain cells exploded.
When she talks about how we can do a better job moving forward determining how much, we never did determine how much. We never did think that Salem residents had to pay the full cost. We never did determine how, but they were trying to determine the general area was it. And then she's thinking, we've already decided all these things, and that needs to be trashed, and we should talk about it in the years to come.
Yeah. Well, I think the bridge issue is one that, at least at this point, remains resolved, and that is that the no-build alternative was the one adopted by the Federal Highway or whoever that the Environmental Protection Agency, all the different folks involved. I think that often when folks talk about the bridge, they kind of use shorthand. And that might perhaps be what's going on here, that there was a lot of confusion around how this would be paid for. I think there was a lot of confusion about whether or not you could just put it somewhere else. I get that a lot. Why don't you just put it somewhere else? Just put it,
Not in my backyard.
Up at Kaiser Rapids or where Wheatland Ferry is, or there's a lot of that kind of it. A lot of it is kind of somewhat wishful thinking, but a lot of it is just, why don't we do something that isn't quite so controversial? And I think probably that's part of the discussion. The reality is we went through a 12 to 13 year process to arrive at that location. And what needed to be done was to complete a couple of minor issues. The funding really was not part of what's going on at this point in the bridge. And I think part of it's just understanding all the different pieces that go into a project like this. This will not be resolved in the next few years. I've said this before. I'll just say it again. One of the first stories I wrote about back in the 1970s when I was a newspaper reporter here on the Afternoon Daily was about the bridge at Mission Street. Well, let me just call your attention to, at some point, and I can describe when, but at a certain point, it was determined, well, need a bridge, but not there. We'll talk about it. We'll just continue to talk about it. This is over 40 years ago here in Salem. It's gone on like that for several generations. And if you skip this at this point, and this is something I've tried to make clear, you are skipping it for this generation. It really will take another 15 to 20 years if you start tomorrow to get to a third bridge.
We're 3 to 4 bridges behind now, though.
Well, we're quite a ways behind. Yeah. I mean, this is not and I think what folks are also saying, and I think it's worth listening to and kind of that as technology changes, as driving habits change, et cetera, there is, I think, a real hope that you can get around having to build another bridge. I don't think that's true. We're going to be adding over the next 30 years, 60,000 more people to this community, and trying to move those folks around, and a substantial number of folks who come into our community to work don't live here.
Right.
And it's tens of thousands of people come in daily.
I heard a statistic.
In automobiles.
In a Chamber of Commerce public policy meeting, and staff was saying upwards of 50 to 60% of the people that work in Salem do not live in Salem.
That's true.
Wow. Anyway, I invite you to share that story from the 70s, Mayor, with
we should bring that
soon
up.
To be Commissioner Nordyke. Say, well, you can say
we'll
look at it in a few years, but
invite Councillor Nordyke on and maybe talk with her about it. She clearly has some opinions, and whether or not they're fully educated, I don't know. I mean, I really don't. I do know there are members of the council who I believe quite sincerely, I think they're sincere in their opposition to the bridge. I don't think they have a full understanding of what the process looks like and where we were in the process, or it's just kind of political. And if it's that, I get that part too.
It's political and it's pandering.
Mm-hmm.
And it's pathetic.
And it's hurtful.
For me, it's the arrogance of coming along saying, I know you looked at it for 13 years, but I didn't get my way. Or I know, or maybe they don't even know. Well, everybody discussed it for 10, 12, 13 years, 50 years, been discussing a bridge. But I think you need me to help you come to the right conclusion.
Mm-hmm.
That kind of late to the game, Johnny come lately arrogance that comes with, we're going to kill the whole thing because maybe you didn't pick my selection, or, oh, wait, I wasn't in the room when this all happened. So we need to make a stop and I need to become a hero for having done so. Anyway, let's not talk about that anymore.
Okay.
Well, let's move on.
And I don't think I'll be honest with you. I don't think there's any heroes. I don't think anyone has come out of this a hero. This whole discussion of the bridge, that took way too long to get through that process. It should have been done in about 7 years, not 13, 12 or 13. We would be on our way toward a bridge if it had been done correctly. So there's beyond the city and city council, which I think takes right now a lot of the heat over this situation, there's a lot to be spread out among others who I think really drug their feet along the way in other levels of government.
It is a highway, right?
It is.
Highway 22,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, the bridge is.
The bridges are?
It wouldn't be 22.
No, that would not be Highway 22.
No,
that would be a different.
But it would be county or more county than state, and less
it's
city.
It's through the city, and then there'd be a number of questions as to how that's funded and who's responsible, and those were things that were just never fully worked out. But I'll tell you, to get to permission to build,
that took
multiple folks, and took too long.
Yeah,
to just get done with a location. That's all we were doing, is locating this thing and testing the environmental impacts of it. That has taken all this time. I mean, it really is pretty remarkable.
Yeah, and so what had not been determined is how many lanes, how many bike lanes, what it looked like, what it costs, exactly how it's engineered and coming in and out. None of those things, and who's going to pay for it.
Right.
And the anti-bridge people, it's one of those you can't have it both ways, because they're the people saying, well, I believe that we should have a circulator. Maybe we should need a bridge just for local circulation. But they're the exact same people that say, well, we shouldn't have to pay for it all.
Right.
Well, you can't have both of those things. If you want to get state dollars and federal dollars, then you have to provide a transportation solution that's more regional.
Well,
so you can't say, well, we need more help. It can't just be burdened upon the city of Salem residents and then say, well, we don't really want, you know, trucks from outside the area using it. We want it for a local circulator.
Yeah, I tell you, the reality in my mind of kind of what went wrong in that entire issue was it became just a bridge or no bridge, solution or no solution. None of that's true. I mean, it is not the solution. It's part of a much larger package of more bikes, more walking, more streets, a bridge, better connectivity, circulators, a tremendously improved mass transit system. And even with all of that, we could have congestion problems as you look at the growth of this city over the next several years.
Absolutely.
That's where I think you start talking about we need four bridges. We need so much in terms of our transportation if we're going to avoid the kind of gridlock we see in some other communities where it's just... And the truth is trying to build your way out of this stuff is very difficult.
All right, we got to take a break, and we do need to talk about Fairview Industrial Area and the Urban Renewal Area and how it intersects with the airport. We're going to get to that right after this with Brent DeHart, Dave Bourne, and Mayor Chuck Bennett on 1430 KYKN.
This is Lindman & Tractor's Newsmakers, Wednesdays with Denise and Dave, presented by Les Schwab Tires and sponsored in part by Furbish, a salvage place, and Kennedy Tax Solutions. Now let's go back to the Capital Auto Group studios on 1430 KYKN. Salem is listening.
This segment of Newsmakers is proudly brought to you by Green Acres Landscape. It's Wednesday, but Denise is not here. She's out sick today, and Brent has graciously presenced us with his, you know, uniqueness.
His unique.
Yeah, my erudite insights.
Oh, really?
All right, so...
I thank you for coming in.
I think he does a great job.
Yeah,
this is what I want to talk about. So Fairview and Urban Renewal Area. Let me get this. Got one more segment here. And it intersects... So this is it's been in existence since the 80s, and all those jobs are created. If you ever been down in that area of town, you know, they manufacture soy sauce and teriyaki sauce. They have actually some government buildings there. You got food manufacturers. There's
a ton of stuff out there.
The number is astounding. When this was put into place in 1984, all of the land, the property taxes being collected was based on $368,000 of value. $368,000 of value. In this urban renewal area, it's now $198,581 of property tax value. So we've gone from $368,000.
Something's wrong there.
It's $198 million.
Oh, I'm sorry. Sorry. Thank you, Mayor.
You're welcome.
$198 million.
I knew what you were saying.
Almost $200 million. Let's just round it. Almost
rounded, buddy.
$100 million of taxable buildings and property ownership out there versus 368. That's why I'm a big proponent of urban renewal. City goes in and puts in the infrastructure, creates the incentive for people to build and create jobs and so on and so forth. Now, and for many years, and if you're not familiar, the money that was being withheld to pay for this no longer even needs to be withheld. Right,
so there's
It isn't being withheld. Right. So what happens in urban renewal is the school district and the county and any other districts forego any of that increase, any of that growth. Right, they get the taxation based on the $368,000 from 1984, but instead of getting taxation based on the $200 million, but now the city has paid for most all of these things, all of them, as a matter of fact, and so those taxing districts are getting their full allotment of taxes on that $200 million of improvements. All right. So now there's remaining money in this urban renewal area. And what staff presented to the mayor and the council at the work session is, hey, we'd like to basically, and I'm going to summarize it for sake of time, we're going to shift the borders. We're going to squish the balloon, and we're going to take away some of the land off of the boundaries of the area and include more of the airport property so that we can utilize the remaining cash balance, as it were. There's a little bit of cash left in this urban renewal area. It's kind of sitting there in no man's land because you can't put it into fire and police. You can't. You could potentially pass it to the school district or the county, but it's kind of locked into the urban renewal area to the tune of $2 million. So staff saying, hey, maybe we can just get creative. We're going to expand the scope a little bit, change our boundary a little bit, and pay for some needed airport improvements that might spur investments and spur additional revenues and so forth. That got that back right, Mayor?
Yeah.
And then if that's done and they spend down the $2 million, and that's kind of the goal, is get the projects done, spur more investment, get more return on the return on that investment, but ultimately just to close the urban renewal area once those funds have been expended.
That's correct. There is always interest out at that airport. We get regular contacts. We have industries out there now that are looking at some expansion. We have others that are interested in siting out there. We need a new taxiway out there, not a runway, but a taxiway connecting parts of the airport. We can always work with others to do buildings that are leasebacks to businesses. We do a variety of things out there. The airport is essentially an enterprise, and its collections of lease dollars or airport landing fees, anything that it collects, is used to operate that airport, and we're looking at that. We're also, there's a terminal building out there that's being looked at for redevelopment for some additional purposes. There's folks that have looked at putting offices out there, multi-use of that building. Right now, a big chunk of it sits empty. So there's some other kinds of looks at that.
So a lot of people don't even realize the Fairview Urban Renewal Area already includes the southern portion of the airport.
Right.
And because of that, they were able to put in infrastructure, which we like around here.
Yeah.
And there's probably maybe upwards of $7 million of hangars out there that are taxable, that people invested, created jobs, and they're paying lease rates to the city, and they're paying property taxes because of that. Yeah. So this would be an expansion into that to include more areas of the airport, right?
Exactly.
Well, I like it, and I like two things about it. I like spending it down and using those, because you collected the taxpayers' money. Let's get it spent on a project, pick a project, and get it done. And then they can close it. And I favor closing it when you're done with the project.
Mm-hmm. And I think that's exactly what will happen.
So we'll be seeing there's too much ruckus about this. But in the meantime, we got to go. Let's do this again tomorrow. Thanks for being here with the Newsmakers. I want to thank Mayor Chuck Bennett from the City of Salem
and
Dave Bourne on 1430 KYKN. Thanks for listening.
See you tomorrow.
This has been Lynn Benton Tractor's Newsmakers, Wednesdays with Denise Quinn and Dave Bourne, presented by Les Schwab Tires and sponsored in part by Furbish, a salvage place, and Kennedy Tax Solutions. Live local talk that matters to you from the Capital Auto Group studios, exclusively on 1430 KYKN. Salem is listening.